We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Switch to some hockey for now, though. It's been a while since we talked some hockey, and there's still a lot to do, I think, saber-wise. Like, we're waiting for guys to be moved off the roster. You'd have to think it's going to happen. We just don't really know when. So for more on the Sabres the NHL as a whole, we bring in now Pete Jensen, NHL.com. And, Pete, thanks for joining me today on this Saturday afternoon.
Oh, sure thing. We're past the free agent frenzy, and the Sabres have made a couple of stealth moves, I think, this offseason to improve their roster.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those. So you can follow him, by the way, at NHL Jensen on Twitter. And starting with some of the stealth moves, like you just kind of mentioned there, and in particular, because I know you're a fantasy guy, and I know the roster projections I always look forward to, and the Sabres signed Marcus Johansson, and we're still trying to figure out, I guess, what kind of role he's going to have, and that's going to be hard to determine, I think, until like there maybe comes another big trade, like maybe Ristolainen gets traded, and another forward comes in there and pushes him further down the lineup. But in terms of what he is as a player, and I guess just projecting based on where he would fit in the lineup right now, how good a signing and what kind of offensive numbers do you think the Sabres could expect from Marcus Johansson?
I think you could safely expect 45, 50 points from this guy, which is great news because the Sabres had, I believe, 360-plus guys and then nobody else with over like 35 in the forward group last year. So they needed some depth. They needed some versatility, and he's going to provide that. He's going to have a bigger role than he had last year down the stretch and in the playoffs than he did with the Boston Bruins, who was playing very well on the third line, averaging about a half a point per game and had some big production and big moments for the Bruins during their run to the Cup final. So Johansson has played center before in years past with the Washington Capitals. He's played mostly left wing in recent years, so there's that flexibility that he brings to the equation. The good thing about Marcus Johansson, and I was excited to see him join the Sabres, just because the Sabres could use, maybe at certain moments use him as center, other moments left wing on the first line or the second line, and also first power play or second power play. He's very viable wherever he plays in the lineup, and that's something that the Sabres it's smart to invest in him for a short term, 2 years, and I think a decent cap hit considering the impact he could provide.
I have to imagine it's hard to project. I mean, it's hard to really guess even here like what type of roles guys are going to have because they have so many right shot defensemen and so many left wingers. So I have to imagine it's going to be pretty hard to predict if there isn't any other big moves coming, what the Sabres are going to look like statistically next year, right?
Yeah, it seems like they're building the right side of their defense, and they have three strong guys. I mean, that Yokoharu move was pretty lopsided, I think, when you consider what Alex Nylander hasn't done at the NHL level. And Yokoharu had a nice first impression for the Blackhawks last year, was arguably their most valuable defenseman at certain points in the season. Erik Gustafsson ended up taking over down the stretch. Second half was one of the most valuable scoring defensemen in the whole league for the Blackhawks. So Yokoharu kind of took a back seat to that. But I thought that was a great trade for them. And, yeah, when you look at him, Brandon Montour, I mean, there are some
Miller they traded for, too.
Yeah, Colin Miller is a great move that they made kind of under the radar. And then Ristolainen, and that's four right-side defensemen and only three spots for the regular lineup placement. So that would indicate something might be coming for the guy who was on the roster last year and past few years through all the bad times, Ristolainen.
Yeah, you mentioned the Nylander trade. Like, it's hard to not love that here right now. Like, when it happens and you see all of Blackhawks Twitter and, like, all of the guys covering the team scratching their head at why they made the trade, yeah, it felt pretty good, at least on this side. Before we get too far away from when you were talking about Marcus Johansson there, I would have to say, like, right now, before a trade comes, and I think a lot of us are expecting that Ristolainen could be moved for maybe a second-line center, but that hasn't happened yet. So as it stands today, Mittelstadt probably figures in to still be their second-line guy, and Johansson would probably be his top six or be his line mate on the left wing. At least that's how this, it would seem it would start. And I'm wondering what you think we could see from Mittelstadt in year two. Like, could he be in store for a big jump, especially if he sees an improvement in who his line mates are like Johansson?
Yeah, the big question for me is, will Buffalo split up? You know those top three guys are going to be on the power play together, but are they going to split them up at even strength? Last year you saw Jack Eichel play with them a lot, also play with some strange names a lot, like Pominville and Fury and stuff like that. They got Jimmy VC as well. Sheary's still there. So, yeah, I think that if they don't make a trade, it's probably going to be either Johansson or Mittelstadt, second line center. I would lean towards Mittelstadt more so, just because Johansson has played more left wing in recent years. So, but it's a big upgrade, no doubt. If he has maybe Okposo and Johansson on his wings, as opposed to everything that was going wrong last year, so maybe you could expect him to venture into the 40-point range. That's a fair expectation after what we saw last year. If he improves and he's RFA the following season, I believe. So he's still got some time, and he's still only 20 years old. So there's still a lot to be excited about for Mittelstadt. I don't think you can write him off just yet.
Pete Jensen from NHL.com, NHL analyst and NHL fantasy analyst, is on the Westher hotline. I want to talk or ask you about some individuals, because we talk a lot about the team in general, and I always love the projections you do. So I'm wondering your thoughts on Eichel for year, what is this, year five now? And last year was the first, I would say, year where he kind of took off in his terms of his offensive numbers, over a point a game. And I'm wondering how much more upside you think there is there, because I remember Nathan MacKinnon being like a 50-point guy for the first couple years of his career, and then he just exploded and suddenly was over a 100-point pace. And I'm wondering if you think Eichel, who kind of has taken that first step, he hasn't necessarily exploded, but I'm wondering if you think he has that offensive ability to where he could take the next step and be maybe even like a heart candidate in terms of his offensive numbers.
Yeah, I think he, 2 months into the season last year, he was a heart candidate, and I think that there was a lot of inconsistency with him and the top line. They were split up at times, like I mentioned earlier. To me, there's absolutely no doubt that Jack Eichel could score 90 points this year, especially when you look at some of the star players around the league. They have elite players on the second line. I mean, this is a top-heavy group for Buffalo, especially in the forward group. And he's going to be involved in everything that Dahlin does on the power play, which looked pretty darn good last year for his time on the first unit. I mean, that's an emerging power play duo. There's the emerging duo of Skinner, who's coming back, re-signed. So even if it's just Eichel with Reinhardt or Eichel with Skinner, there are a lot of options. I see Jack Eichel doing at least what he did last year and possibly much better, which would mean 90-plus points. I think that's very realistic to expect for him at only 22. And this is the time where he's making top dollar now officially. So, they're going to need that and maybe more to make the playoffs for Eichel.
And then on Dahlin, I wonder, too, where he's going, like, if you know it all, like, in fantasy drafts, because I would expect, given his talent, that he's going to reach a point in his career where, like, I'm a big fantasy hockey guy, and it seems that those defensemen, like, they seem to be the same guys year in and year out. And I'm wondering when you think, even if it's this year, that Dahlin could kind of join that fray, if at all, where he becomes, like, at least in offensive numbers, is like a top 10 guy in the league. 40 points last year, I think you'd have to expect there's going to be at least some improvement this year.
Yeah, for sure, especially if Ristolainen gets traded. I mean, he's going to be the sure number one power play guy, probably going to have 25, 30 power play points. If the other guys on Buffalo, top forwards, take another step further, So, yeah, I think Dahlin, fair expectation is for him to go from the mid-40s, improve a little bit at even strength, maybe get more consistent first power play usage, and venture into the 50-point range. To me, it's a matter of when he'll get into the 55-60. I don't know if it's going to be this year. There are a lot of questions, but I do know that as a left-shot defenseman and four good right-shot options to play on his pair, I really like that from the standpoint of Dahlin, no matter how you slice it. If he ends up playing with Montour or with Colin Miller, those are the things to get excited about. Maybe more responsible guys for a full season. Montour only came over, at the end of last year. So those are the glimmer of hope for Dahlin in the short term. But, of course, his long-term ceiling remains really high as well.
But I want to go around the league with you a little bit in a second here. But one fantasy question before that. I'd have to imagine, in terms of the Sabres, Eichel's the top guy being drafted, right? Or ranked?
Yeah, and you were talking about Dahlin. I mean, he went in our first mock draft, like, just outside the top 100, Dahlin.
Okay.
So you can get some good value on him. Eichel is going to be drafted in the top 50. There are a lot of strong centers around the league, so maybe you take him, like, right after, the Malkins of the world, right around, someone like Mark Scheifele, players of that caliber. So we view him very highly. Players like Nicholas Backstrom as well, guys who are good every single year. That's what we come to expect from Eichel at this point.
Yeah, that's really good company. Malkin, Scheifele, et cetera. I want to go around the division a little bit with you too here, because when talking about the Sabres, it's hard to see them necessarily being too much of a factor in the playoffs this year, not just on what they have to do on their roster, but given what is around them in their division. Like, other than Detroit and Ottawa, it's pretty formidable. And the one team I think that I'm most interested to hear your opinion on is the Florida Panthers, because they hire Quenneville, they made a couple of additions. Hoffman's still on the team. I guess he's a candidate that could be traded, but he's still there for now. And I'm wondering what you think of Florida for this year, and if it's right to say that they are, not significantly, but clearly ahead of the Sabres going into next year.
Yeah, I'm always looking at teams that missed the playoffs the previous year, and clearly there are two of them that jump out at me that have improved in the coaching department and also on the ice, and that's the Florida Panthers, like you said, and the Philadelphia Flyers. And all those teams in the Metro have also improved, like the Rangers and the Devils, significantly from the draft and free agency. So that's worth noting. But yeah, in the Atlantic, to me, and whole league, I mean, if there is one team that I would wager on making the playoffs who missed it last year with full confidence, the Florida Panthers. I mean, they got one of the best coaches in NHL history to hopefully shore up some of their defensive issues. They have a young forward group and defense overall, high-powered offense. And then they got a top five goalie in the league, a surefire workhorse in Sergei Bobrovsky. And that was really their only weakness in recent years. They had great forward groups. They had two 90-plus scorers last year with Barkov and Huberdeau. They had a number two power play in the NHL, number two or three. And, I just think that was the missing link, the coaching and the goaltending, which are both now sure things. So that, to me, is full confidence that they'll make the playoffs next year, and they'll kind of be more than just the hype. They're not even a sleeper to me. To answer your question, I think they're fully ahead of the Sabres right now for that fourth spot in the Atlantic Division.
That just makes it so tough, I mean, to make the playoffs if you're the Sabres, because you talk about that. Like, I agree with you completely. Like, Florida, I thought, was already ahead of them. And then even though I don't necessarily think it's smart to pay a goaltender what they paid Bobrovsky, at least on the short term, he makes you a lot better just entering in one of the top five goalies into your roster. So you've already got Toronto, you've got Boston, you've got Tampa, and now here's Florida. So basically, how it seems to me is, if you're not going to be better than any of those four, which is going to be hard, then you've got to beat out all but three of the Metro teams. I'm interested to hear you mention Philly there as a team you could see bouncing back, because to me, that would be a team, if you're the Sabres, if you want to make it, you have to be better, I think, than the Flyers and teams like that. So how do you see the Metro going, and do you think the Sabres can legitimately be better than at least half of that division? Because they'd have to make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's going to be tough to do, no doubt, because the Devils have Subban, healthy Taylor Hall, Jack Hughes, number one pick. So they're going to be right in that mix. I would lean on them a little more than the Sabres right now, even though the Sabres have improved their roster. I expect the Sabres to be maybe in the mid-80s in points at least, maybe with a higher ceiling, which would put them in contention. Usually playoff teams in the mid-90s or so. So, yeah, I think that the Metro is going to be really tight. You see a team like the Islanders didn't necessarily get worse. You see the Rangers get Artemi Panarin, the biggest fish in all of free agency. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the Sabres still have work to do. I'm interested to see what they could fetch for Ristolainen in the forward group. And, you know, their goaltending is still an issue. I mean, we're talking about some of these other teams, like the Devils have a nice tandem with Corey Schneider and Mackenzie Blackwood. The Rangers still have Henrik Lundqvist and two goalie prospects behind him. And the Islanders have Varlamov and Thomas Greiss, who was elite last year. So, I mean, they all have the advantage over the Sabres right now. But again, the outlook is looking better for Buffalo, and I think there's still work to be done, which makes things very interesting as we get to training camp.
You can follow Pete Jensen, by the way, at NHL Jensen on Twitter. You can listen to the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. I know on Apple Podcasts. I listen to it, I think, even on Spotify. So wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find that there. One question I do want to ask you before I let you go here. Do you have any thought on that trade yesterday, Lucic for James Neal? It just seems so weird and almost funny at the same time. It's hard to even call it a hockey trade because, like, hockey trades usually involve players that are pretty good, and these guys, it's hard to differentiate, I guess, between the two.
Yeah, there's been some weird stuff going on between the Flames and the Oilers. Like, Talbot was on the Oilers for the past few years. Now he went to the Flames. Mike Smith was on the Flames, starting for the Flames in the playoffs. He's now signed with the Oilers to be part of their timeshare. And now this, with two misfires on the free agent front from recent years between Lucic, who has really fallen off, and James Neal, who signed with the Flames last year and was a big disappointment. I think there's a little bit more upside for James Neal just because he shot a low percentage last year. He's been a 20-plus goal scorer almost every year of his career, and throw him in with either McDavid, Draisaitl, or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and there's a little glimmer of hope there. I think Lucic is destined for the bottom six for Calgary. That's no doubt about that.
That's funny. Like, I think when I get to these fantasy drafts in about a month, I just feel like I'm going to end up with James Neal just thinking about that. Like, if he plays with McDavid, McDavid's the ultimate inflator for any winger that he's playing with. And, I mean, Lucic was just so bad for the past couple years. Neal, it's different. Like, Lucic, to me, hasn't been great for 3-4 years, whereas Neal, I mean, he had a good season 2 years ago. And, like, what could you be looking at statistically, though? Could he reach 25, 30 goals if he's playing significant minutes with McDavid and Draisaitl? I would probably think he could.
Yeah, I think fair expectation would be 20, 25 with a higher ceiling and cap of maybe 30. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. Would anybody who watches hockey be shocked if James Neal played half to three quarters of the season with Connor McDavid and scored 30 goals? I don't think anybody would. So in that light, I think it's a nice little trade and a much more favorable swap for the Oilers, who really need something going beyond those three forwards that I mentioned. They have a similar situation to Buffalo in terms of money tied up to two players in McDavid and Draisaitl, but much worse because they have absolutely nothing around them other than RNH.
Right. Pete Jensen, you can follow me on Twitter at NHL Jensen. You can listen to the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Pete, thanks for joining me on this Saturday, man. Appreciate it, and look forward to the next time we talk.
Yeah, looking forward to training camp and preseason. We'll talk again, and thanks again for having me on. Have a great summer.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.